before our next session. I want to introduce Bob Ramsey again. We were here, many of you heard him, I guess, in our keynote earlier. Was it Monday?
Monday.
It seems like such a long time again. But as some of us kind of talked about around our agencies, you know, we should be able to cut off our arms and still lead. So we're leading with our words of encouragement. And so forth, and really appreciated that around, Michael Phelps' story do it for us. That was a really good session. Thank you for that, Bob. Bob's a Harding grad, so he's kind of a kindred spirit, he kind of knows a little bit about us, and we probably know a little bit about him. So anyway, we just want to welcome Bob back. Thank you for being here, Bob, and I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Chandler. Thank you very much. So back in the 19th century, there was a young philosopher who decided to move from the country to the big city. And back in those days, there were a lot of philosophical clubs. Like there was one club that thought the world was flat, and another club thought the world was round. And there was different philosophies back there, and they kind of competed against each other. And like a rivalry, kind of like political parties do today, but with not all that anger. So he decided when he went there that he was going to either join the free will club or the determinist club. And of course, the free will club, as we all know, is people who believe in that you have free will. You can make your own choices. You can go where you want to go. The choices you have are yours. You are where you decided to be. And the determinist club doesn't believe that at all. They think that all of our choices are made by chemical reactions or by our parents or grandparents' values or, you know, we're not in charge of ourselves. All right? So he did all this research and he said, well, I think I'm going to join the Determinist Club. So he went up to the Determinist Club on this side of the road and knocked on the door. A little window opens up and a shadowy figure on the inside says, who is it? What do you want? He said, well, I want to join the Determinist Club. Why? What do you want to join our club for? Well, I've done all the research and I've decided that determinism is true. You've decided, eh? Well, that sounds like free will to me. You can't join our club. So he said, okay, well, he walks across the street, and he knocks on the free will club. Another little window opens up. What is it? What do you want? I want to join the free will club. Why do you want to join the free will club? Well, I wanted to join the determinists over there, but they wouldn't let me, so I came over here. I had no other choice. Window slams shut. So what's the young man's problem here? You know, he doesn't understand his own free will. He tries to deny his own free will even when he has it. And I think that you and I probably discover people all over who are trying to join the determinist club all the time. They're denying their own free will. And when that happens, you see, then we start to neglect. We start to feel like we're out of control. We feel like we don't have a choice in things, when we actually do have a choice in many, many, many things. I know I live where I live out of choice. Now, it would be very, very difficult for me to move. Maybe it would be difficult for you to move. Maybe you're like me that you owe more in your house than it's worth. But I could move, couldn't I? I could choose to move. I want to tell a little bit of an embarrassing story of myself. And I'm just saying this story to make a point. I'm not really trying to lecture anybody, okay? But in my coaching, we coach around four ideas. We coach leaders around four ideas. One is their presentation skills. We know that people who have good presentation skills are perceived as having better leadership. Another one is their competence, how well they manage their time, manage themselves, manage their calendars, keep their commitments, are optimistic. That's a value of competence in this versatility idea that TRACOM owns. Another one is feedback, how well we connect with people, how good of a listener are we, how well we are warm and genuine with people. And then the other one is image, how we manage our image, how we, dress, groom ourselves, comb our hair, get a haircut, whatever. So I was talking to one of my coaching clients about this image, and we were talking about fitness, because fitness is a level of part of image, right? And he said, well, you really want to be fit, Bob? Let me loan you my P90X videos. And I said, okay, I'll give that a try. So I took them home, I plugged it in, I started doing it, and you know, here's the thing, I thought I was fit. I thought I was fit before I started doing that, and I almost threw up. The next morning, I couldn't move any of my limbs. I couldn't get out of bed. I ached for 3 days, not just sore. I was in pain. I had to take painkillers for 3 days. And I after 3 days, I was kind of challenged because he kind of shamed me into doing this. And it was a customer of mine. So I kept going and I kept going and I kept going and I kept going. And I wouldn't say it ever got easier. I never, it's an hour long. Has anybody ever done P90X? It's an hour long. And I never got through the whole hour. Never got through the whole hour. I went up to 40, 45 minutes on some of them. I think the stretching, I got all the way through the hour. But it was a really eye-awakening thing for me. And the eye-awakening was I had been selling myself short. See, I thought that I was fit, and I really wasn't as fit as I thought I was. And I think that we do that a lot. Why? It's because determinism is all around us. This philosophy is always talking to me. Always. I have to keep choosing free will. Keep choosing it. All right? So you can do a lot more with your life and your free will. And I'm not talk about things that you can do, but you can only do these things if you have free will. Okay? You have to embrace your free will. Does God give us free will? Absolutely he does. That's where it comes from. It comes from God, right? So we need to reject this philosophy of determinism. We are not, I don't care where you are, I don't care where I am, in any area of my life, spiritually, financially, physically, geographically, nothing, do I have to stay there. I do not have to do things the way I've always done it, or the way we've always done it, right? We can make choices. So that's what this is about. So I want to talk to you about three ideas that you can use, and I brought another worksheet, and I'm not going to wait to the end this time. We're gonna stop in 15 minutes. We're gonna do this, okay? Because I'm excited about this. I need to hear this. I need to hear this every time. Every time I talk, the teacher learns more, right? I need this all the time, all the time. And the three ideas are to think big, take small incremental actions, and record your activities. Think big, take small incremental actions, and record your activities. So thinking big. So there was a barber cutting a guy's hair. And cutting his hair. A goofy-looking guy starts skipping down the road. Barber said, hey, that's Tommy. He's the stupidest kid in town. Let me prove it to you. Hey, Tommy, come on in here. Hey, Mr. Williams, what's going on? Hey, Tommy, I've got two coins here. You can have your choice. And he shows him an old rusty dime and a bright, shiny quarter. And Tommy looks at that for a minute. He grabs a dime, runs out the door, takes off. Barber says to the businessman, see what I tell you, stupidest kid in town. as this man starts thinking about this, he said, I don't know about this. He gets his hair cut, goes out, finds Tommy on the street, say, Tommy, I'm just curious, why'd you take the dime? Tommy says, well, if I take the quarter, the game's over. So what was it about Tommy choosing the dime over and over and over, right? See, he knew how to do something in his own best interest. He knew how to make a choice and do, he knew how to think big, basically. He knew how to think big. So, thinking big is, really a powerful thing that we neglect a lot, I think. You know, several years ago, I worked with one company. It was an oil field chemical company. And I didn't know this before, but they put chemicals down oil wells and gas wells to make them produce better, make them more environmentally sound, make them kill bacteria that creates poisonous gas. So the chemical companies sell to the energy companies, okay? So I was working with a small company in Kansas, and a typical sale for them would be they would go out, a salesman would go out and sell one well worth of chemical, and they would get it over and over and over. In other words, they put chemicals down this well, you know, month after month after month, and a typical sale was like $10,000. So they would sell a well, $10,000 a month, guy would get a commission on that, company would, you know, do the deal. If they had a big sale, it would be two wells. So they hired this new salesman who didn't really know much about the business, and but he was honest, and he was hardworking, and he was humble, and he went out and gave his pitch to a new company, new energy company. And so the president of the company listened to the whole pitch, and he said, "Well, that sounds good. So how many wells do you want to start with?" And they hadn't told him about the one well, two well idea. So he said, "How about 200? The president thought a minute and he said, "Okay, let's do it." And so he went back, took a 200 well order back to the company, and which was 100 times bigger than their biggest order ever. And the president of the company said, "You know, what the heck? I didn't even know a 200 well sale was possible." You know, it changed that whole company. It changed everything. What happened? He accidentally thought big, didn't he? He accidentally thought big. And I know I think small way too much, because I think about one well, two wells all the time, instead of accidentally thinking big, 200 wells. Metaphorically, right? Do you know that the first 4-minute mile was run in 1954? Right? And prior to that, they didn't really run the mile race any, did they? I mean, in 1953, 1952, they never ran the mile, did they? Yes, they did. They ran the mile in 1950s, in the 1940s, 1930s, 1920s. They ran as hard as they could, and nobody ran the 4-minute mile. Until one guy in 1954 did it. And then later that year, somebody else did it. And then the next year, hundreds of people ran the 4-minute mile, including high school students and men over 40 years old. So what happened in 1954? It could be done. They were thinking small before 1954, right? And in 1954 and 55, they started thinking bigger about the four-minute mile. Did I say that right? The 4-minute mile. Okay. So the idea here is that we get these ideas stuck in our head and we think small. So I want to know how you can think bigger. How can you think bigger about your results? Let's make the assumption here that you do good in the world. You're in the business of doing good in the world. Nobody here runs a bad establishment. You run establishments that do good things. So how can you think bigger and do more good things? Can you do that? Can you cover more ground? Okay. Think big. You can think big all you want, but unless you take action, you're going to just be a dreamer. So the next idea is take small incremental changes. So I live here in St. Louis, and we have winter here. I don't know where you come from. But a couple years ago in February, there was one of these misty, cold mornings. And they said that the temperature, we're probably going to have freezing rain, but it's not going to be until about 7 a.m. in the morning. So the temperature's dropping, and I'm listening to the radio, and they said the temperature's dropping, and everybody's crossing these bridges. The bridges freeze first, and we've got a couple bridges on the Mississippi River, and people were just zooming across 70 miles an hour. You know, at 6 o'clock, it was 34 degrees. People just zoom, 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 zoom. At 6:15, it was 33 degrees. It's coming across. And then at 6:30, 32 degrees, the bridge froze. All those cars piled up. 28 car pile up on the Poplar Street Bridge. Wham, 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 wham. 28 cars went to the junkyard because of that 1 degree. 1 degree. 1912, the Titanic's plowing through the North Atlantic in water that's just 1 degree warm enough till it hits a what? Block of ice. It's 1 degree cold enough. That 1 degree made a big difference to that Titanic. Just like it made a difference to the cars on the Poplar Street Bridge. So it's 1 degree ideas, 1% ideas that make a big difference. Small things make a big difference. If you take a 24-hour day and you take 1% of that, it's about 14 minutes. It's about 14 minutes. Now, if you were to do something like P90X, if you exercise anyway for 14 minutes of drop-dead rate, will it make any difference? Yeah, it'll make a huge difference. Make a huge difference. If I do cold calling for my business for just 14 minutes a day, will it make any difference? Make a huge difference. If I do a Facebook Live for 14 minutes every day, will it make a difference in my marketing? So what are we going to think about? What small things can you do? What small things can you do? Because small incremental changes over time make a huge difference. Right? See, I'm talking about these ideas that have made a big difference to me. So I want to think about what you can do. How can you do this? Here's what happens to me. I have a great plan of making my cold calls for 14 minutes a day or exercising 14 minutes a day, and I get distracted. The phone rings, I check my email. What else distracts us? I got 3 grandkids.
Facebook.
What?
Facebook.
What?
YouTube.
Pinterest.
What?
Pinterest.
Instagram. I'm still trying to figure out Instagram. I went to a seminar a couple weeks ago, and he said, you got every social media has their own language. You know, you don't want to put a story on Instagram. It's just pictures for there. And you don't want to put, YouTube, you can go long. Facebook, you have to go short. It's for a video. So I thought, I got to figure this out. But I don't have the 14 minutes. So I get distracted I got to mow the lawn. The grass started growing last week. Just all these things. Grandkids need this. My son's coming in from out of town tonight. You know, just all these things that are distracting me away from the things that make the biggest difference. In fact, I'll tell you that When I do coaching for executives, you know, executives are just like us. They're just like us. Actually, you're all executives, right? You're all executives. But I could tell you that I coach executives with billion-dollar companies, and they have the same issues that we all have. They don't have 14 minutes either. They're getting distracted too. That they have things that if they were to do this thing over and over and over, let's say it's make 3 or 4 phone calls. Let's just say that's it. Does anybody have that you should call people that you're not calling now? Does anybody have that on their list, the to-do list? There's people you should call that you, it would help your cause, but you get distracted and you don't call them because it's not really a comfortable phone call. No, we had 6 or 7. Okay. So I have that. The executive I'm going to meet at 11:30 has that. Okay. And so if he did that every day for 14 minutes a day, would it make a difference? It would make a huge difference. So how are you going to do that? That's the idea. Do small incremental changes. The last idea is to record your activity. Record your activity. So if you think big and you figure out some small things you can do, you've got to keep doing them. Keep doing them. I brought in, just for fun, my recordings. Can you see this? It says P90X at the... See? You can see here, it's supposed to go an hour down to here, and so this is where I quit, right here, you see? It's right here. You know, push-ups, wide front pull-ups. I couldn't even do a pull-up back then. My older son bought me this big rubber band that you put over the door. And you know, instead of having to pull up my whole 175 pounds, I only had to pull up like 75 pounds because the you can push down on the rubber band and you can do it that way. And that's what I did at the beginning because I couldn't even do any. Okay. But you know, after a while, you get better. But recording your activity is powerful. I also do this right here. Let's see if anybody ever done one of these before? Can you say that out loud?
Time journal. What gets measured gets managed.
Time journal? Anybody ever keep a time journal? What? Don't have time. It does take time. So I'll pick 2 days here. This is such a painful activity that when I assign it to one of my coaching clients, I do it myself too because I hate this. I hate doing this. But it's amazing how if you do this, write down what you do over and over, how you see, oh my goodness, I didn't make my calls. I didn't make them Monday. I didn't make them Tuesday. I did take a shower on Tuesday. I did do my meditation and Bible reading on Wednesday. I went shopping with my wife here, but you know, I didn't do my calls. So it kind of has an accountability thing, right? That's what keeping track of it. That's what recording is keeping track of things. It works for finances. There was a famous author named Mark Ford who started making more and more. He struggled and struggled and struggled, like many authors do. I know one in particular. And then he finally did well. He did. He just started doing really, really well. And he started making more money than he had ever made before in his life. And so he, you know, when you make more money than you've ever done, what happens? You spend more money than you've ever spent in your life. So he went to his accountant and said, what can I do about this? I'm not getting any wealthier. His accountant said, well, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll just record your activity. So I'll make a balance sheet here every month, and you can look at what you're worth in April, and then you come back in May, you look what you're worth in May, I'll just do a thing. There'll be no lecture, no scolding at all. Just see what you're worth every month. And all of a sudden, what happened to Mark? He started making better decisions. He started making better decisions because he knew he was going to come in and say, oh, I'm not any wealthier than I was. Maybe I shouldn't buy another car. And so he doesn't buy another car. And he comes in, oh, I'm doing better. There's science that says if you want to lose weight, you weigh yourself every day. Now, some people say that discourages them. But the research says that if you weigh yourself every day, what happens? I know what happens to me. I weigh myself every day. If I'm driving through McDonald's to get 3 cookies for a dollar, do they do that where you are? 3 cookies for a dollar? Nobody knows that. All right, well, it's no secret now. You can drive through McDonald's, get 3 cookies for a dollar, 3 chocolate chip cookies for a dollar. We take them home, we split one, she gets 1.5, I get 1.5. You know, that's kind of like our treat. But, you know, if I've been up on the scale a little bit, I think, oh, you know, maybe I'll just eat 1 cookie or 1/2 a cookie or no cookie. Yeah, I think, oh, I can have my cookie tomorrow. Whatever. You see, you just make different decisions. When you are aware of what's going on, you make different decisions. So here's this worksheet. I'm going to pass it out right now. So I think there's enough there. There's one for you. And this is a worksheet I'd like to all of us go over. You have to write. Yeah, you have to write it down. So, Thank you. Actually, I'll tell you that there's more good that comes out of workshops like this for you filling these things out than there is by me telling any good stories. Even though I like the stories better. More? Okay. I know I brought a lot of them. Thank you, Chandler. Let's do the first one together, just for fun. Quiz. Identify the which of the following statements reflect big thinking. 1, we should probably set our target growth for the same as it was last year. Have you ever heard anybody say something like that? Right? Let's just coast. Let's just not rock the boat. I was, Monday after I left here, I went to another event and I spoke at another event. And before I spoke, I was talking to the people and I was talking to a guy kind of like sitting back in the back row. If you'll notice, I like to sit in the back row. I like the back row. Anyway, he said to me this. He said, what do you got? Late life gig going on here? That's what he said to me. What club does that guy belong to, right? And I said, no, I got a real passion for doing what I'm doing. What do you do? And he said, well, I worked in a corporate job for a while and I'm kind of semi-retired. I'm kind of trying to figure out what else I want to do. We should probably set our target growth. Okay, 2, I don't see why we can't double the results we had last year. There's nothing to stop us. Don't you love people to talk like that? 3, we can never be like them. They have all the advantages and we have none. Isn't it tempting to think about that? Isn't it tempting to think that way? Maybe it's not for you. Maybe you don't have it. I do. I don't have the right background to lead a successful team. I need a more modest position. Okay, others have achieved great things. Why haven't they? Why not us? Okay, so list three ways you've been selling yourself short. And then list one dream. Would you dare to dream if you knew you could not fail? Incidentally, I think that dreaming big probably keeps you younger than anything else. Besides having a tight relationship with God. He's a big thinker. Didn't Abraham say, I don't have the right background to lead a successful team. I need a more modest position. Wasn't that Abraham said that? It was who?
Moses.
Yeah. Thank you, Moses. You can tell I'm not a Bible scholar.
Yeah. You just forgot what you learned.
Right. I hope you're all writing and thinking. Hey, incidentally, when we have leaders who think small, what happens to the people that are following those leaders? And they get demotivated, right? So I want to always be around people. I want to follow people who are thinking big. Thinking big. I had two grandfathers. I guess everybody did. I guess most people did. The one grandfather was a big thinker. And the other grandfather was a very, very small thinker. The grandfather was named Bob Ramsey, who was a small thinker. I hate that. And my other grandfather, Homer Kinnison, was a big thinker. And the year he died, he was suffering physically, but he was still thinking big, and everybody wanted to be around him. He was optimistic and thinking big, and man, that guy still inspires me. Still inspires me. I wrote two pages of my journal on his 100th birthday, and my younger brother's kid, who's about 30-something, came over to our house, and I showed him his great-grandfather, you know, what I had written about his great-grandfather. I had a picture of him there and in the journal, and just kind of wrote when I was a little boy, the interactions I had with him. And Kevin said, oh my gosh, I never knew that. That was a small thing for me to write in that journal. Writing a journal is a small thing. I got 14 years of journals now, one for every year. My family all says, Dad, what happened when we went on vacation in 2006? And I just go access my journal. And are you writing down 1% changes? 6 1% activities you could bring you closer to your dream. Have you already done this? Do you have boards that kind of coach you through doing this? Listing 1% activities that you can do to bring you closer to your dream? Your personal dreams and your work dreams. Zach, we're just going over the same old thing here? Was this good stuff?
This is great stuff. I just keep going at your thought before trying to get you to do this because
they're not doing it either, are they?
No.
Yeah. Well, that just more ammunition in my research then, because very few people do this at any level. Actually, if you do this, if you start making a discipline of thinking big and then making small actions to head you towards that, and then record that, it's amazing the difference. Amazing. I'm going to guess that probably nobody in here has a 401k. Because you don't do 401ks, right? You're all 403Bs, okay? So you can do 403Bs. You can do those. Okay, so. Oh, okay, okay. Well, whatever. You know, small changes make a big difference. So a few years ago, I'll just tell you here that, you know, I had three kids, and they're all grown now. And two of them went to college. And I tried to help pay for those. And then my middle son and I started a business in the recession of 2008. And so, and though about like in my 40s, I bought some commodities. I think I bought cocoa, which went way up and then way down. And so, like, I'm not, like, I work for a living still, and I'm not going to be able to retire. It's okay with me, because I like to work, but I'm not thinking about retirement at all. I'm just hoping to God, praying to God that I can work till I'm like 80. Then I'd like to die. But I thought, you know, I just can't leave a legacy of not saving money. I can't do that. So a couple years ago, I called up one of my friends, Christian Lukemeyer. Anybody know him? Christian Lukemeyer in Troy, Illinois? He's a, you know, Christian financial guy. And I said, I want to start putting $50 a month in, $50 a month. Not that much, $50 a month. He said, okay, we can do that. Started doing $50 a month. And then here about 4 or 5 months ago, I said, Christian, I want to bump it up to $57. And I thought, you know, I can project it. I can make 20% return, which I'm not going to, until I'm 80, and it's not going to be any money. But when I die, my kids are going to be able to say, oh, Dad tried anyway. He tried. He was moving in the right direction anyway. But Christian says to me, $7 is a 12% increase. That's a 12% increase. That's big. And I thought, looks like a small 1% thing to me. Okay, and now how about this? Recording your activities? Let's just go over this. The outside temperature at dawn and dusk every year, if you recorded that. That's a recording, but it doesn't record activity, right? The percentage of projects that are completed successfully on time and on budget. Do you know that almost nobody does that in the business world? They just don't do it. They're making things up as they go, just like all of everybody. They're just making their stuff up. The date, everyone's birthday and wedding anniversary. Is that a good thing to record? Well, it's not. That's a trick question. This is my creative business partner wrote that. It's a trick question, right? Because it doesn't, you're not measuring anything by recording anybody's birthday and wedding anniversary. But if you remember people's wedding anniversary, is that going to make a difference? Make a big difference. Everyone attendance patterns for meetings. That's big. The number of prospecting meetings each month. That's big. So tell me, let's have a little conversation here. How can you be more successful? What would it take for your business to be more successful? Robert, can you start? What would it take for you to be more successful? Your ministry to be more successful? Yeah.
We could expand some of the services that we do, both in our outpatient counseling center and we have a child placing license, so to expand into foster care.
Okay. Is there an unmet need out there in your area? Mm-hmm. So if you can meet those needs better, then you'd be more successful. Mm-hmm. Okay. How do you find those people?
We market, we recruit.
Okay. Do you use online marketing?
We do some online, we do face-to-face.
Okay, so is when you do it face-to-face, who does it?
My director of accounting
Okay. Do they go visit people?
Do
they do 5 visits a week? Do they do less than that? Do they do 2 visits a week? If they did 5, would you cover more ground? Okay. Is that impossible? Is that like unreasonably expectation? 5 a week? Okay. I wonder if you could challenge that person to do 4 a week. Maybe. Who else? How else can you be successful? Anybody want to? I called on him, but I kind of want somebody to volunteer. Yes.
I'll do one. Just from your Monday, I said building my team, like strengthening my team is something that I think will help us to definitely grow.
Okay.
Increase morale.
Okay. So how are you going to strengthen your team? What are you going to do?
I put down that I want to do 10 minutes a day, some activity at work to build a team. If that's checking in with a case manager that I haven't checked in with, if that's using a team building activity during one of our staff meetings, something I can do every single day that either builds up a particular individual team member or just brings more cohesion to the team.
Okay. All right. And you don't do 10-minute meetings now?
No.
And if you start that, that's just 10 minutes. That's even less than 14.
Yeah.
You have 4 minutes to spare.
I can record.
That's right. All right. Good. Good. Anybody else? What would make your team more successful? What would make your business, your facility, your ministry more successful? Anybody? Yes.
Mine's kind of simplistic, but I've had as a goal, and I've failed at it, is just writing a note of appreciation to each staff member. And, you know, at 24, I could, every other month they could get a note just with something specific I've noticed. But I can see it's not that much, you know, it's 5 minutes a day.
Yeah. What's your first name?
Sean.
Sean. Do you ever get thank you notes? Notes of appreciation?
Very rarely, but I've been in situations where I did, and from someone who had thousands of people to be writing notes to.
Yeah.
It made a big impact when I did get those.
How long do you hold on to that thank you note before you put
still
it in the trash?
Still
have them. Still have them. Does anybody have a thank you note that somebody wrote them more than a year ago and you still have it? Wow. Did you see how many hands went up? Almost everybody. Why are you keeping those thank you notes? Because they're powerful. And Sean is going to start sending out thank you notes, powerful pieces of paper. Powerful pieces of paper. He's going to start sending those out more often. Is he going to get, are people going to save the thank you note that he sends?
Yes.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. Good. Thank you, Sean. Sean, tell me the numbers that are going to make your ministry expand. You know, in other words, do more good in the world. If you're at a 5 now, can you go to a 6? Tell me what has to happen for you to do more good in the world. Tell me.
What has to happen? Well, I think of morale. You know, a building up of morale.
Okay.
Makes our services more rich. And so I'm thinking about house parents in particular who are so isolated. And I want them, I don't want to lose house parents. So I want them to say, hey, this is a great place to be. And I'm going to get longevity and I want their services to have more rich.
So you're going to take some actions, sounds like, to increase the morale of your house parents, to make them more excited about their jobs and their ministries, so they're more engaged in the leadership that they're doing. So you're going to be leading leaders, really. You're going to bump up your leadership of your leaders and help them to just be as excited and purpose-driven as possible. Great. Great.
So,
any, yes.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Why is it so hard? You talked about your executive a while ago, and you felt so bad you asked him to do it. You did it yourself. Why is it so hard to write it down?
To write this down?
To record. You know, we can be big thinkers and even have some sense of incremental. But why is it so hard to record it and write it down? That's for me, maybe others don't struggle with that, but it's hard to, it's like I'm wasting my time to write it down.
It feels like a waste. It feels like a waste. And especially if I have wasted the last half hour, I have to record that. Like here, on February 11th, 2019, at 11:30, I put on here for the last half hour, I had been on LinkedIn, which means I was browsing LinkedIn, and I was looking at Snapchats from my oldest son. He sent Snapchats, and I was snapping back and forth with him.
So maybe it's because we don't really want to be accountable.
Maybe that's it.
Because you don't want to face your failure.
Yes.
Like, it's the same reason this year, for the first time, I wrote down goals in my life. And the reason I never wrote it down was because I knew I'd have to force myself to look at things. And I have them right next to me, and I consider them failing in most of them. But they're there. They're constantly reminding me.
Yes. Yes. Yes, and we get all kinds of excuses, don't we, Zach? All kinds of excuses. The guy that I was talking to Monday afternoon, his excuse was his age. You know, it just burns me when people use age as an excuse. Because I think of Bob Ramsey and I think of Homer Kinison. Bob Ramsey is over here, Homer Kinison is over here. I want to be like Homer Kinison. I want to set big goals. I want to hold myself accountable. I want to get other people to hold me accountable. I hate being held accountable. I hate it. My accountable partner is 33 years old. He lives in Vancouver, Canada. He's landing at Lambert Field tonight at 9:55 p.m. He wrote that book with me. It's my son. I've got a lot to do between now and 9:55. Get an accountability partner. As painful as it is, get an accountability partner. Time, 9:41. I'm going to leave you in 4 minutes, but I brought this Bible verse to you, and I'd like to read it. It's out of 2 Corinthians 6. I'm sure you've all heard it before, but this encourages me, and I thought about you. I thought about you. Rather, as servants of God, we commend ourselves in every way, in great endurance, in troubles, hardship, and distresses, in beatings, imprisonments, and riots, in hard work, sleepless nights, and hunger, in purity, understanding, patience, and kindness, in the Holy Spirit and in sincere love, in truthful speech and in the power of God, with weapons of righteousness in the right hand and the left, through glory and dishonor, bad report and good report, genuine yet regarded as imposters, known yet regarded as unknown, dying and yet we live on, beaten and yet not killed, sorrowful yet always rejoicing, poor yet making many rich, having nothing and yet possessing everything. And I just want to tell you how much I believe in what you're doing, and I am honored to be here. I want to thank you so much for inviting me, Steve. I want you guys to just win big wherever you go. There are people out there counting on you, and to me that's kind of like describes my struggle. I wonder if it describes yours too. So thank you very much.